Hey, welcome to the Maroon PR Podcast. Spin is a four-letter word. We like to start our pod by explaining why we named it this way. Well, if you're a PR pro and you hear the word spin or spin doctor, we hate it. And we don't like it because it kind of implies that you're lying or you're being dishonest or you're stretching the truth. What we do is communicate. What we do is help our clients message and help them tell stories. So when you hear the word spin, it makes our skin crawl, and hence the name of the podcast. And on our podcast, we're going to be diving into all things public relations, media. We're going to have honest and open conversations. We discuss the good and the bad. And we're going to be talking to some of the most interesting people around, from fellow PR pros to journalists and those that are actually under the spotlight and being interviewed. So our goal is to have this honest, informative conversations. We hope you enjoy it. And if you like what you hear, please, subscribe, follow us on social media, and give us your honest feedback. We want to get better as well. Hey, everybody. John Maroon here. Welcome to Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR Podcast, all things public relations, media, et cetera, et cetera. Joined today with Jen Renahan.
Hi, hey, everybody. Jen.
And today is a very personal thrill for me. Phyllis Merridge is going to be our guest. We're going to get to her shortly. And Phyllis Merridge was an executive in baseball when women were not executives in baseball. She is a trailblazer in that sense. She's been in the game since the late 70s. And she's an amazing woman and the reason why I have a career. So I cannot wait to speak with her. Jen, I know you've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. Just get a little insight on, female perspective and what she kind of went through. And yeah, I'm excited.
One of my favorite people. Let's just cue it up and get to Phyllis Merridge. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR Podcast. This is John Maroon. I'm here with Jen Renahan, our VP of Social, Digital, Content, et cetera, et cetera. Hi, Jen.
Hi, everybody.
And here with Brittany Everett, our quiet but effective producer. Thanks, Britt. Joining us today is, well, quite frankly, the reason I have a career. Phyllis Merridge has been in the game of baseball for a while. A few decades now, and she is a trailblazer and one of the most respected people in the sport today and a person that I love very much. And Phyllis, we're really glad you're here. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me, and thank you for that lovely introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
Oh, you can.
yeah.
So, Phil, first thing I want to talk about a little bit is what are you up to now? You're working with the Yankees after a very long career with Major League Baseball. How long did you work with MLB and the American League office?
I began in the American League office when it was a separate entity in 1974 and finished a 43-year career with the commissioner's office after MLB sort of absorbed the two league offices back in the year 2000.
And to give anybody, sorry to interrupt you, Phyllis, to give everybody a little bit of background, I was Phyllis's first ever assistant.
First ever.
And in 1987, when I graduated college, and she took me on, and I'll never forget, she said, I'm going to teach you, you're going to learn, but there's no future for you here. You need to go to a team, and we're going to be here for 3 years. At the time, there was another legend of PR, Bob Fischel, working in the office with Phyllis, and she said, Phyllis, Bob and I aren't going anywhere, so we're going to help you get with a team. And true to her word, 3 years after working with her, she called the Cleveland Indians and told them they have to hire me. And and it kind of took off from there. But, Phil, when we're looking at the game and media relations and public relations and its evolution, I mean, can you hearken back to the early days when you were just getting into the industry and compare it to now, the world of the web and social media? I mean, it's got to be just a different universe.
I will do my best to put it in context for you. When I began working in 1974 and sort of attached myself to Bob Fischel, who was the media relations director for Lee McPhail, he had come over when Lee McPhail became president, and Bob was his right-hand man at the Yankees and came over to the league office with him. And in those days, there was one PR director for every team. Maybe he had an assistant, maybe he had an admin, but basically that person did it all. And that was the way I was sort of brought up in the business. I mean, now you have a business PR person, a media PR person, mm-hmm. a baseball PR person, a social media PR person, maybe a corporate and strategic PR person. In those days, it was unheard of. The PR director for the team, the PR director for the league did everything.
Yes.
It is crazy to see how roles have expanded.
And, I was, you know, the end of my career at MLB was on the cutting edge, sort of right on the cusp of when social media really took off. And so I'm not really that well steeped in it or seeped in it, but I know the power of it, and I understand what it can do and how it helps teams and sometimes how it hurts teams.
For sure, Phil. Yeah. I mean, I think about it now, and I don't know if I could be a team PR person now. I mean, the demands, the 2 a.m. tweets by an athlete that just kind of set you into a tizzy and result in a conference call and need to issue releases or statements. I mean, it's mind-numbing what you have to look at now. It's 24/7.
Yeah. There was a short period of time while I was still at MLB when they were trying to educate people about knowing what you're doing when you put a tweet out there or when you put something on social media or when you just put anything, even texts that can be picked up, as we know, you know, and we were trying to educate people that you can't just say what's on top of your head. You have to think it through because the written word is often misinterpreted. You know what you're saying. You know what your inflection is. You know what you mean. But the person that's reading it doesn't necessarily. It's a very, very high wire job. And people that do social media for the teams and do it well, I give a lot of credit to because it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, well, we were just talking, I think this morning, John, or the other day, about teams and just young athletes and how I think the day of really taking the time to plan and talk to athletes and sit them down and help them understand. I mean, that I'm sure you guys did a lot of back in the day because everything was planned out because you could plan out when a player was going to go public with something. You have less control today. And I feel like there isn't enough planning and there isn't enough education to the athletes when they come in and they're young and they have all of this freedom to talk and tweet and do whatever they like. That seems to have gone away a little bit.
I agree with you. And I think it's, you know, it's a slippery slope for a lot of people. You know, in the time that I was working in media relations at MLB, I watched print journalism succumb to the TV journalists. Mm-hmm. And then the TV journalists sort of succumb, I should say the network TV, they succumb to the cable TV, which was more immediate and more extensive. And now the cable TV people are succumbing to the social media.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's the way it's kind of evolved from my perspective. There's always another wave of something better, bigger, faster, freer. And as I said before, freer and faster can be good. And it can be bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to take this down a little bit of a different path. Looking back to back in the 70s when you started your career, what made you want to go into sports? Obviously, in an industry that was very much dominated by men at the time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can talk a little bit about it, but it's not a very fascinating story. I was working at the time for a wonderful boss at the Singer Sewing Machine Company.
Hmm.
And the company was moving out of New York City to New Jersey. And I had to make a decision because I had been there about 10 years. I had been even there promoted up a little bit out of the secretarial role. And I decided that if I was not going to go with the company, it had to be for something that I thought was really cool, really interesting, and that I had a passion for.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent some resumes around, one of them to the Mets. One of them to the Yankees, and one of them to the baseball commissioner's office. And I got a call from the commissioner's office that Lee McPhail was becoming president, taking over for Joe Cronin, who was a Boston Red Sox at heart. Mm-hmm. And they were moving the office. In those days, the league office always moved to the home city of the president. So they were moving the office from Boston to New York. And was I interested in an executive assistant position for the president? And I interviewed, I got it, and I jumped at it. I loved baseball. I was a Mets fan at that time. I had a strange little, like, 10-game plan where I went to a game, you know, once or twice a month. I loved the game, and I loved the beauty of the game in addition to the statistics and the facts and figures. Mm-hmm. I just love the ambiance. It's played in beautiful weather. The grass is green. The players, to me, move around on the diamond almost like dancers. It's a beautiful thing to watch. And so I took a little bit of a pay cut, but I took the job. And then I was just smart enough when that was July 1st, 1974, and Bob Fischel came over from the Yankees in September when the season was over to work with Lee. And I was just smart enough to attach myself to him, and I got very lucky. I worked for two men who were progressive for their time. Mm. There were not a lot of women in any kind of professional, mm-hmm. yeah, I won't say professional, I will say executive
sure.
positions. And they were good enough to give me some chances and gave me the chance to give people like John Maroon a chance.
And I'm forever grateful.
And then John Maroon gave me a chance.
That's right.
All right, there you go. You see, that's as it should be. Generation yeah. to generation, that's as it should be.
For yeah. sure. I should also share with everybody that's listening, when Phyllis, when the Singer Sewing Machine Company moved to New Jersey, I knew Phyllis would not go to New Jersey. In fact, the only time she comes to New Jersey is once a year to have breakfast with Carolyn and I, right?
Yep, and I'm buying this year because I lost a bet.
That's so. Right. I'm looking right. forward to it.
He's threatening me, Jen, with how much he's going to eat at the bet. So I have yeah. to pay for.
I'm going to make a scene.
And let me just say that John was a great assistant. He's a great PR guy, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. He was born to it. But he got the job because, what were you? You were interning?
Yeah,
with
it's my
the
last
commissioner's office?
Yes.
Yeah, and he was interested, and I was able to hire an assistant. He was interested, and in the intra-office mail, he sent me a cartoon that broke me up. And I thought to myself, well, I don't know if this guy's going to be any good at PR, but at least he'll make me laugh every day.
This is a fact. This is a fact.
So I hired him.
And, just
and I was never sorry. I was never sorry.
Thank you, Phil. And look, just so you guys know, too, it's my last day. I graduated from St. John's, and I was walking around the office saying goodbye. You know, it was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And as I'm leaving, Phyllis grabbed me, and she's like, I just got approval. And she gave me what she would – what did you name my office? It was like the size of a closet.
The Shetland Pony Office.
Shetland Pony Office.
It was actually the smallest – it was like a closet that had a miniature desk in it. That's why I called it the Shetland Pony Office. But we had so many laughs. And he did a great job, and we worked well together, and we had a lot of laughs. And by the time I left after the 43 years there – I had had 14 assistants.
Wow.
And almost all of them have gone on to do great things, but nobody better than John.
Wow, well, that's great. That's a true testament.
So, we're in love, if you can't tell. We're in love, John and I.
Well, it's funny because I was an intern for the Aberdeen Ironbirds, and we're working the first Cal Ripken World Series, which is the youth baseball tournament that was held there. And maybe I made John laugh, because right after that, he was able to hire an assistant at Ripken
right.
Baseball.
Right.
And we spent, I know, I just remember we spent, you know, some weird long days in that press box. And then a month or so later,
understand.
John was able to hire someone.
That's funny. I understand. That's great. That's a good story. And I'll just hark back to what you said, Jen. When I started in 74, there were very few women in any kind of executive or traveling positions. And it was a little bit easier for me because Bob Fischel, my mentor, was so well-loved. I mean, I think John may have told you our PR award is named after him. I mean, he was the, you know, creme de la creme of PR people. And he was a great person to have teach me. And because he liked me and was willing to teach me, I had a little bit of a leg up because the media and the other PR people sort of thought, well, if I was okay with Bob, I must be okay. But I would go, my counterpart in the National League, my friend Katie Feeney, and I would go to meetings and sit in a room of 100 men, the only women. Mm-hmm. So we became best friends because out of necessity.
Yeah.
Because we sat together, we ate together, we went to the ladies' room together, you know, it was all that. And
sure.
And it was not always very comfortable. The first time that I walked into the press dining room at Yankee Stadium, old Yankee Stadium now, I opened the door and all conversation stopped and turned and looked at me.
Wow.
And I am not, I think John will tell you this, I have gotten more used to public appearance as my career went on, but in those, I was shy in those days. That
sure.
was not for me. I didn't like anybody even looking at me, much less, you know, 50 crusty old New York baseball writers.
Phil, do you think, I mean, obviously it's gotten exponentially easier for women in sports now, but do you, from what you know and you talk to, I know you stay in touch with a lot of women in the game. Are there still the challenges out there because of the locker room dynamics and that sort of thing? Are they still facing these sorts of challenges, or I'm sure things have evolved, but not completely.
I think that you're right. I think that things are easier, but not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. I mean, there's always going to be somebody that doesn't want you there, or somebody where you know that you're just where you are because he has to let you in.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Well,
and, you know, men are men and women are women, and there are always challenges. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I don't know how to explain exactly what I mean about it. I think you always feel it. I think you get an instinct for who likes dealing with you, who as an executive, mm-hmm. as a professional, and who likes dealing with you because you're a woman. I think that there is always a little bit of that. Is there much less than there used to be? Yes. Yes. Is it totally gone? I don't think so.
Yeah. Do you have any, like, particular stories about, you know, like a tough situation that either you were in or you saw someone else in?
I could tell you some stories, but I'm not going to.
Okay. I understand.
Okay. Because, you know, it's hard to tell those stories without naming names
sure.
or naming teams, and I'm not going to do it. So,
for sure.
You know, we took a deep breath and muddled on in those days.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give either, you know, not even just women, but just young people trying to get into the industry, the PR industry today?
I would advise them to be prepared to do anything that it takes professionally to get what you want,
mm-hmm.
but to be do not be prepared to do anything that's unprofessional.
That's good.
I would say I'm going to tell you another story in a minute, but I would say that I always say to fixate on the career that you want. When I interviewed people for jobs at the American League office, I didn't like it when people said, well, I just want to get a foot in the door. Hmm. I wanted someone who wanted to be a PR person
mm-hmm.
or who wanted to be an assistant GM or who wanted to be a broadcast executive. I think you need to decide what it is you're going after and then position yourself as best you can to get that. And a lot of it is just luck.
Well, luck
just being in the right place at the right time, you know.
And I think, you know, building relationships and taking the time to build relationships with people, which it sounds like, you know, that's what John did with you. And
absolutely.
You know, that's a big part of it.
It is, and it helps. It helps a great deal. Mm-hmm. I would only say that, you know, sometimes in an industry like sports, you have to be prepared to be very patient because jobs are not that readily available. But if you're patient and you do the right things and you position yourself properly and you keep in touch with people and you know, look at everything that's available to people now that we didn't have back in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
LinkedIn and, you know, job fairs. They hold job fairs at the winter meetings now for people. I mean, there's a lot you can do, but you also have to be prepared to do what's asked of you professionally, which maybe you're not going to come into baseball and be a general manager 2 weeks later.
No.
You know, it's very much an industry where you earn your stripes. So I'm going to tell you this story. I use this as an example when I talk to people. When back in the late 70s, I wanted very much to go to the PR meetings at the winter meetings. In those days, they were three-day meetings. It was all male,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to go, mainly because I wanted to learn. And Bob, who was a great guy and took very good care of me, he didn't want to take that on. He had not taken an assistant before, and he had not taken an admin before. And so I said to him, what if I go? I know, John, you've heard this story. I said, what if I go and I pay my own way? And I'll take the minutes in the PR meeting, and I'll come back, type them up, and we'll send them out. He said, let me check with a couple of people. And then he came back to me and said, look, if you really want to pay your own way, airfare, hotel, meals, okay. So that year we went to Orlando for the winter meetings, took the minutes, sent them out when we got back. The next year it was in Dallas. I went, took the minutes, sent them out when I got back. The third year they were going to Honolulu. And he came to me and he said, well, when are you leaving? What flight are you on? I said, Bob, I can't pay to go to Honolulu. I don't have that kind of money. I can't. He said, well, who's going to take the minutes? So they took me.
You proved your worth. Yep.
Yeah. I love it.
So, and I never missed one after that. So I use that as an example of how sometimes you have to be a little bit smart about positioning yourself.
Well, and Phyllis, look, I think the lesson to a lot of folks getting in is sometimes, look, if you want to get rich, you're not getting into baseball.
Absolutely.
And you got to do whatever it takes, roll up your sleeves. I mean, I would never leave the office if you were still there. I would never leave the office prior to you if Jim Small was still there.
Yeah.
And so you got to put in the time, you got to put in the work, and you got to worry. Don't worry about what am I making?
Yep.
Where's my next, when am I getting promoted? That'll take care of itself if you're patient. Phil, I want to ask you though, I'm going to switch gears to your career and your experiences. You have, for people listening, Phyllis Merridge has covered every event you can think of, every playoffs, all-star games, jewel events, special events.
Yep. Yep.
And don't just say 21-31 and make me feel good, but like, give me your top three or four favorite events that you've been a part of over your illustrious career.
Ooh, well, the all-star game in 1983, when the American League finally won after an 11-year losing streak, what is indelibly etched in my mind, and we won it on a Fred Lynn home run off Atlee Hammaker, and for a couple of years after that, I had Atlee Hammaker's picture on the wall in my office.
See, now I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I don't think there's not that same feeling of like AL versus
the league
NL.
Rivalries, yeah, are
yeah.
not the same as
that
they
was
were,
a big deal then, right?
It was a huge deal. And Lee McPhail was going to leave the presidency in 1984. This was his last All-Star game, and he had lost every one of them prior to that. So it was a big deal. So that one was special to me. I got to say, the 1999 All-Star game in Boston with the All-Century team was very special to me.
Yeah,
that was there were some very special moments, not to mention that I was in the American League dugout with Kevin Costner. So that one was special. I took care of 38 All-Star teams, American League All-Star teams. I prided myself on knowing the players, knowing their families, taking good care of them. We used to laugh and say a happy team is a winning team. If they came away from their experience in our office happy, we were happy. But so I don't want to single them out except for they were more moments than they were events.
Yeah.
That Ted Williams moment at the All-Star game in 99 was a very special moment. And now I'm trying to think if there is an ALCS or a World Series that, I was standing in the outfield on the edge of the bullpen when Joe Carter hit the home run to win for the Blue Jays. I mean, all of those times, they're moments.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible.
They're indelibly etched in my mind, those moments.
Well, people got to know when Phyllis's role at these All-Star games was she was the go-to person for the American League All-Star team. So they'd show up at the hotel to pick up their things, get their ring, get
their tickets.
And any problem that arose with a player or their spouse or a kid, Phyllis's phone would ring and she would answer the bell and solve it and form some really great close relationships with people that then you ended up at their Hall of Fame induction.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Hall of Fame inductions are always special to me. The World Series and the playoffs are full of those moments like the Joe Carter home run for me. I'm trying to, my mind is racing. I can't.
Well,
I
there's
can't
so many,
Phyllis,
there's so many I can't even imagine. And
yeah, you know, but at the I was going to say that at the postseason, I ran the press conferences pre and post game. And, I was going to say, how could I forget Jack Morris's 1991 extra inning Game 7 World Series win for the Twins? That might have been one of the highlights of my career.
And one of your favorite all-time players.
One of my, if not my favorite, one of my favorite all-time players. So I'm trying to, I started to say, I did all those press conferences, and I worked with every manager. I mean, Cito Gaston for a couple of 3 years. Tom Kelly for a couple of years, Joe Torre for 4 years, you know, Tony La Russa for a number of years, because and each one of them is very special to me.
That's great.
And I like to think some of them are still friends.
For sure.
Jen? I think just one more question I have is, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about the relationship between media and journalists or teams and today. Uh-huh. And do you think that has evolved over the years? Do you think the relationships... do you think that journalists or work hard at relationships with players and vice versa still today as
I
maybe you saw it back
I think
then?
That good journalists do all those things, Jen. Mm-hmm. I think that the nature of journalism has changed.
Yeah.
I was saying this to John whenever we last talked that, you know, it used to be when a team came in, when the Baltimore Orioles came into New York to play the Yankees, you knew who was coming with them. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, Ken Niro, Peter Pascarelli, Dan Shaughnessy writing for those papers. And you knew it was a traveling team of beat writers, and it was always the same. And people signed on to the beat, or the columnists signed on to their papers for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. Now, it's hard to tell. You know, it's hard to tell who's coming, who isn't. People don't stay at jobs for long periods of time. The nature of the schedule and the grind gets to people faster.
Yeah.
And harder, I think. And it's not a, what's the word that I want? It's not a critique of the way people cover now. It's just that everything is different. And, you know, when you're old, like I am, you look back, everything, you look back on it very fondly through sort of a rose-colored lens. I don't know at the time whether it was as much fun for the writers as I thought it was in those days.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. I mean, we struggle with that here, I know, just with our teams, and because we're built on that. You know, John has built this company to be built on relationships, and so building relationships mm-hmm. with media is something we have mm-hmm. to do as PR people, right? But it is harder today because mm-hmm. they're moving faster, they're going to different publications, they're not covering the same beats, you know, they're covering
yep.
five different
yep.
topics. So it's, yeah, yep. it is a challenge, and it's something we deal with too. And you're right, it's the industry, it's just the way of the world.
And I think that the nature of journalism now, I want to be very careful how I say this. I think that the nature of journalism now is a little more, I don't know if sensational is the word I want to use, or if it's a little darker. It's, you know, mm-hmm. there are not as many really good, feel-good stories, and there are not as many long feature stories mm-hmm. about people and things that there used to be. I used to love reading those feature stories.
Yeah, less and less people read lengthy things now, I
yeah.
agree.
Yeah.
And I think there's also that rush to break. Everything's
yeah.
a rush to break.
Yeah.
24-hour news cycle, social media, like, okay, maybe I'll get to screw this up a little bit, but I'll be first, so I'll tweet it now,
yeah.
or I'll put it up on our website
that's
now.
What I was trying to say about the chronology from print to network TV to cable
right, yep.
to social media. That's what I was trying to say. You're saying it better than I did. So,
yeah, absolutely. But it is amazing when you do see in sports today the time when the journalists do take the time to kind of the community aspect and that kind of thing. We have seen that here in Baltimore
yep.
recently, and
yep.
that is nice to
yep.
see when they do take that time to,
yep.
to really uncover
and,
stories.
Yep. And I'm getting a particular kick these days out of watching how happy players and teams are to have fans back
yeah,
in the stands.
Absolutely.
It's really
and
nice.
And it's interesting. I will be interested to see how the nature of covering the team changes now that they're doing everything by Zoom.
Yeah.
And when we're all hopefully one day back to what we were, how that's going to influence how teams are covered and players are covered in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting. Don't you think, John?
It's a really good observation. I think the world around us has changed. A lot of it will return to normal or what we thought was normal, and a lot of it's going to change for good, and it'll be interesting to see how that happens. But, you know, I agree with you, though. It's nice to see athletes celebrating fans being around in all sports and just being happy that they're back. That's how the dynamic should be.
I do think it's given athletes an appreciation.
Yeah.
For fans that they perhaps did or didn't have before, but they're expressing it now, which makes me happy.
Yeah,
so,
me too. Well,
so as you know, I have to put a little plug for my current team now.
Yes,
as you know,
course.
I retired after 43 years at MLB, and about 2 months later, the Yankees reached out to me. They had a position open as the concierge on their suite level, and they also asked me to supervise their family room. And I jumped at it because I wasn't quite ready to sit home and do nothing. And so I have now had 3 wonderful seasons at Yankee Stadium and would have had a 4th one last year if we hadn't shut down. And I'm back there this year, and I'm excited to be back. We're about to start our 2nd homestand of the year.
No, I'm so glad. It must be nice to be back. And you were telling me there are a lot of protocols and a lot of things you had to learn before going back, but it's such a joy. And I think all of us and people are so chomping at the bit to get back. I'm sure it's exciting and fun for them.
It is, and they've been very good to me and make me feel very much like part of the Yankee family, which is lovely.
Well, you are, and I think that speaks
well. If Maroon PR had hired me, I would have had a different career. You know, my career would have taken a different turn. But
Maroon PR couldn't afford you. We'd be able to take out a loan. And listen, this speaks volumes of your relationships, Phil. I mean, you know, I know you're very humble, but you know, up the food chain, the president over the Yankees on down, and they all think very highly of you, and that's for a reason. It's what you've earned.
Thank you. That's kind of you, John, and I think highly of them. I'm very grateful. So I'll tell you, the team world is getting away from me. There was a point of time where I could walk into any team office and know everybody there. And now I'm getting both to the age, and I've been out of MLB for about, this is, I think, my 5th year, I don't really know so many people anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
it's
how it happens.
Good. Yep. Not good. But I do love sitting on the concierge desk. The elevators are right in front of me, and the door will open, and one day it'll be Roberto Alomar walking out. Another day it'll be Roger Clemens. Another day it'll be some Yankee alumni. You know, it's really fun.
That's really cool. Roberto Clemente would have been something, though. But that was fun.
Yeah, that would have been something. But, you know, that was wishful thinking.
Yes, yes. Hey, Phil, we're going to let you go. But I thank you so much for taking a little bit of time.
This was so fun. You guys are great. This is so fun. John, I can't tell you how happy I am you sent me that cartoon.
Me too. Do you still have it? Lie to me.
No, I don't. But I remember it very clearly. So, have a good season, and I'll see you guys at a ballpark one of these days.
Phyllis Merridge, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thanks for listening to Spin is a 4-letter word. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe. Send us your feedback too. We want this to be interesting for everybody. And give us a follow @MaroonPR on Twitter and LinkedIn.